Notes from the Left Forum in New York City. Rage Rebellion, Organizing Our Power was the theme of the conference. Chris Hedges, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author most recently of Wages of Rebellion, The Moral Imperative of Revolt, spoke at the Left Forum on May 20th, 2016. The plenary, Capitalism and Militarism, Organizing Our Power at Humanity's Peril.
So I love Chris, but I don't know that I agree with you about Bernie Sanders, that he should have run separate, because I think he's done an amazing thing within the Democratic Party, which is get a lot of young people engaged and educate millions and millions of Americans about the tremendous economic disparity in this country. Talk about issues of mass incarceration to people who haven't heard that before, incorporate the issues that Black Lives Matter has brought to him, and also show the tremendous split in the Democratic Party. And if Bernie hadn't run, you wouldn't see that there is, on one side, a Democratic Party that's represented by Hillary Clinton and Wall Street and the weapons industries and all that's wrong in this country. And the other side are people who really want to see the Democratic Party represent their values, and those are values that Bernie Sanders is standing for. So, raise your hand if you've worked on or voted for Bernie. Raise your hand if you plan to vote for Hillary Clinton. Now, you might see that's just a very small sprinkling here. Raise your hand if you plan to vote for Jill Stein. Wow. Raise your hand if you plan to vote for Gary Johnson, the Libertarian. Raise your hand if you plan to vote for Donald Trump. We got one gentleman over there, one over there. So, it's fascinating times in this country. It's a fascinating time to be with a group like this. And it's a fascinating time to think about the opportunities that we have now and that we're going to have next January. First, I want to just summarize what has happened to the peace movement under Obama. Now, let's remember that Obama came to power because he beat Hillary Clinton. And he beat Hillary Clinton why? The Iraq War. The Iraq War. He was perceived as a peace candidate, and that's how he became president. Now, let's give him a credit for a couple of good things, really good things that have happened in these last 7-plus years. One is the Iran nuclear deal, incredibly important, done against great odds, with the help of a lot of people in this room, I'm sure, but going up against big lobby groups like AIPAC, going up against Israel, going up against a lot of powers that did not want to see this go through, and it won. And the other is Cuba. Let's recognize that Obama did an amazing job opening up to Cuba. There's still a lot to be done. The embargo still exists. But let's recognize these are two diplomatic successes that happened under his administration. But also, let's not forget, they did not happen while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. They happened after Hillary Clinton left and John Kerry came in and acted more like a diplomat. So those are two positive things that have happened. But there have been so many bad things that have happened on the foreign policy front. Let's remember that this peace president, as Laura Flanders said, who got the Nobel Peace Prize, did not get us out of the wars of Iraq or Afghanistan. Has bombed 7 countries at least, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Libya, and Syria. Has not closed Guantanamo as he promised. In fact, instead of closing Guantanamo, he would have been embarrassed to put more prisoners into Guantanamo, and his answer was instead to use drones to just kill people instead of capturing them and imprisoning them. And so he became the drone commander-in-chief that has spread this horrendous technology, not only being used in the United States, but is spreading it to many other countries around the world. He didn't close the over 800 military bases we have overseas, in fact, has been involved in building new bases. And in case anybody hasn't noticed, all of this militarism has not led to a decrease in terrorist groups, has only led to a spread and a change of name from things like Al-Qaeda to the Islamic State. Trump, on the other hand, is saying, we gotta rebuild the military if I get elected. As if the military needs something like more money. $632 billion, the budget this year, obscene amount of money, but that even hides other monies that are not considered with the Pentagon budget, that if you put them together, like Veterans Affairs, money from the Energy Department that go to nuclear weapons, you add all of that together, it's about $1 trillion. Not only is it 54% of all of our discretionary money, but it's more money than the rest of the world combined. We have the most grotesque military in terms of our taxpayer dollars, and guess what? They can't win a war. And that's not because they're underfunded, it's because they're sent to fight in unwinnable wars that we have to get out of. Let's not just blame it on Barack Obama, let's look at Congress. I live in Washington, D.C. now, and unfortunately, I get to see it up close and raw when you go into these congressional hearings, and you see these Congress people from the Democrats and the Republican side falling over each other to give more money to the Pentagon than the Pentagon even asked for. And when the Pentagon wants to close a base here and there, Congress says, oh no, you couldn't close that base, it's in my district. It will mean jobs. And when the Pentagon says, oh, we don't need those C-17 planes anymore, they're old, they're not useful, the cargo planes. The Congress says, oh no, we couldn't possibly kill that program, it would mean 35,000 jobs and it would be in my district. And of course the weapons manufacturers know this game all too well, it is their game after all, and they make the parts of their weapons in as many congressional districts as possible. Take the most expensive weapon in the history of the world, the F-35, made in pieces of it in every single congressional district. And the weapons manufacturers then give money to the Congress people in those districts, so the Congress people keep pushing those weapons, and the Congress people turn around and they don't say, of course, oh, we have to keep these weapons going so I can get money for my campaign. Instead, they say, jobs, jobs, jobs. Now, what an insane way to have a jobs program. After all, the military is probably the only job creation program we have in the United States. Millions of people are employed in active duty and reserve, millions and millions more for feeding the military machine. And it is, you know, Fareed Zakaria, who's, I don't think you would call a socialist, he's a pretty mainstream economist on CNN, writes in the Washington Post, he calls the U.S. military the largest socialist economy in the world. He says it's cradle-to-grave socialism. You get your money, you get your early retirement, you get your pension, you get health care for your entire life and your family, you get free housing, you get daycare, you get early retirement, you get goodies from movie theaters to golf courses. It is indeed a jobs program. The former Secretary of State, Robert Gates, said, I don't know if he was boasting, but he said there are more members in the military marching bands than they are in the entire State Department Foreign Service. An insane jobs program, making things that make us unsafe, nothing we need to live. They don't make food, they don't make things for us to wear, to house ourselves, they don't provide infrastructure for us, nothing that we as consumers need. It's not even a good job creation program if you look at the studies that are done that showed when you put $1 billion into providing jobs in the military, you get about 11,000 jobs. If you put it into education, you'd get 29,000 jobs. If you put it into anything else, you would get more jobs. In fact, I don't think they counted this one, but I would be pretty sure if you took all that money and dropped it from airplanes onto people, that they would create a lot more jobs than the military would create. And it doesn't keep us safe. As I mentioned, there are more groups that would like to attack us than there were before. ISIS is indeed a threat. We just see probably a terrorist attack on the plane that came down going from France to Egypt. But let's remember what Martin Luther King said at the time of the Vietnam War stands true today. The U.S. is the largest purveyor of violence in the world. And it's not only the violence that the U.S. does directly, it's also the indirect violence, because our number one industrial export right now is what? Weapons. And when your number one export is weapons, your number one global marketing strategy is? Endless war. So the U.S. sells weapons, lots and lots of weapons. And the number one purchaser of U.S. weapons is? No, it's not Israel. Saudi Arabia, that's right. Now think of how absurd and how obscene this is. Saudi Arabia, a country that is number one in beheadings in the world, a country that treats women as minors their entire lives, the only country in the world where women are not even allowed to drive, a country that exports extremism, Wahhabism, the distorted form of Islam that is exported around the world thanks to the petrodollars that the Saudis have. The Saudis, who got involved in the internal affairs of Yemen, dropping bombs since March of last year that have killed thousands of people, thousands of innocent people, have taken that poor country of Yemen to the extreme of a humanitarian crisis. With our weapons, including cluster bombs banned by the international community, that makes us complicit in war crimes. The Saudis are number one purchaser of weapons. The number one recipient of U.S. military money is Israel. Another major human rights violator, an apartheid state that on a daily basis is oppressing the Palestinian people. That state is the number one recipient of our tax dollars to the tune of $3 billion a year, but that's not enough for the Israeli government. In fact, to give their okay to the Iran nuclear deal, they said, you must sweeten this by giving billions more to us. They wanted $5 billion. Obama said, let's go for $4 billion. We're at $4 billion. Negotiations still going on. They want more. This is where our tax dollars go. This is where our weapons go. Number two recipient, military aid, Egypt. An extreme violator of human rights that came to power through a coup. And it's not enough to sell those weapons overseas. Those weapons manufacturers, those greedy weapons manufacturers that Pope Francis said have blood on their hands, are also looking for more internal markets. They look at the 18,000 police departments in the United States and they want to sell their weapons and their tanks, their assault rifles, their grenade launchers, their drones. They want to sell them right here in our communities to put down our own people particularly poor people of color who are the victims of the militarization of our police forces.
You're listening to Code Pink co-founder Medea Benjamin at the Left Forum in New York City.
So here we have a war economy out of control, a weapons, a military-industrial complex out of control, and a peace movement that has been incapable of striking fear into those in power and moving them away from this military-industrial complex. So let's recognize that another place we have to put blame for all of this is ourselves, for not being capable of building the kind of movement that we need, the effective movement to put pressure in the places where we need to put it. So now we look at the opportunities that we have. Well, when Obama came in, our peace movement died. We had a strong peace movement under Bush. Obama came in, people said, oh, that peace president is going to take care of it. He obviously didn't. Well, fool me once. What did George Bush say? Don't fool me again. I think one positive thing we can say about a prospect of either a Hillary Clinton or a Donald Trump presidency is we will be not fooled again. There are no illusions that either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton are going to be the peace presidents that we need. There is no illusion that they are going to get us out of the endless wars. It's interesting that Donald Trump has said a couple of interesting things, hasn't he? Like that NATO is obsolete. It's a great thing to say. It certainly is obsolete. He even said that he would talk to Kim Jong-un of North Korea. It's a positive thing to say. But let's not be fooled by Donald Trump. And remember, at the heart of his campaign is the Islamophobia that he's been preaching, is the anti-immigrant hatred that he has been preaching. He's even said that he would bring back torture, do whatever you have to do. So Donald Trump is certainly not going to be a peace president. But that gives us the opening, because people will be ready to protest. In fact, just yesterday, in D.C., we protested at the opening of Hillary Clinton's offices. And it was quite amusing because we went as billionaires for Hillary. We went as with signs that says, I make weapons, I love Hillary. Wall Street loves Hillary. And we stood outside as the mayor of Washington, D.C. went in, as different officials went in. And they looked at us in kind of horror as we said, we are the 1%, we want Hillary for president. And Hillary, she's our gal, take our corporate money now. But the workers who were working for those officials came out and said to us, thank you for being here. We agree with you 100%. There are lots of people that agree with us and that are happy to see us protesting already from the get-go about Hillary taking money from Wall Street, about Hillary representing the weapons industry, about Hillary taking $10 million from the Saudis as part of her Clinton Foundation. These are things that have to be exposed. Whether or not Hillary Clinton makes it to the White House, we need these movements to pressure her. And the other thing we need to do is build an alternative to the war economy that does not depend on who is in the White House. And let me just say, on building this alternative economy, it's a couple of things, and one is happening already on a very wide scale, which is called the localized economy. I'm sure that many of you are part of it. Instead of investing in the big banks, you invest in credit unions. Instead of buying from factory farms, you buy from local farmers and organic farms. Instead of buying from sweatshops, you buy from thrift stores. Instead of crass consumption, you reuse and you recycle. Instead of buying fracked oil, you buy your energy from solar and wind. This is the kind of economy we have to build. And from the war economy, we have to convert from the top down. Remember conversion? It was a big thing during the 70s and 80s. We have to bring back the whole idea of economic conversion, where we take these militaries and bases and the factories and turn them into the wind farms we need, turn them into the solar farms we need. Instead of Aegis destroyers that are floating in the Gulf, we should turn them into floating hospitals that are going to take care of the refugees and the people who are fleeing from the wars that we start and the people who are fleeing from the natural disasters from the climate crisis. This is what we need to turn the war economy into. And so I want to end by saying that we have a tremendous opportunity to show that whether it's Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, they represent an economy that's built on competition. We want one that's built on cooperation. Instead of one that's built on constant growth that destroys the future, we want one built on sustainability. Instead of one built on us versus them, we want one that's built on interconnectedness. Instead of one that judges success by wealth, like Donald Trump, from casinos to luxury hotels to how many golf courses he's built, we want ones that are measured by healthy communities and healthy ecosystems. We want a vision that engages and inspires and unites people from the Black Lives Matter movement, the immigrant rights movement, the peace movement, the environmental movement, the labor rights, the artists, the students, to say that we will only give peace a chance when we challenge those in power and replace the war economy with a local peace economy. Thank you.
You've been listening to Notes from the Left Forum with peace activist Code Pink co-founder Medea Benjamin, recorded in New York City on May 20th, 2016. You can learn more about Code Pink's issues and campaigns by going to codepink.org. Rage, Rebellion, Organizing Our Power was the theme of this year's Left Forum. Notes from the Left Forum was produced at WBAI News in New York by Linda Perry, with thanks to Brian Drolet at Deep Dish TV and Seth Adler and Associates at the Left Forum. Thanks for listening.